Brussels for Palestine, recorded in downtown Brussels.
We're here in Brussels, and we're in a space of community gathering. And I would say it seems that Brussels has, for the last year, been a space where a lot of community gatherings and action to support Palestine has taken place at a very grassroots level. There's been so many mobilizations, cultural events, significant space and a significant city for the mobilization to support Palestine in Western Europe. So I'm sitting with someone who's very involved in organizing locally, and I think it would probably be great for people to just hear from you directly, if you could just introduce yourself and maybe just tell us where we are as a starting point.
No problem. Hi. Right now we're sitting in a space called The Kitchen. It's a dear space to my heart. It's a collective of artists mainly doing digital art with focus on Palestinian liberation art and resistance art. And yeah, so I'm part of Brussels for Palestine. We're a collective that sprung from the streets of Brussels all the way in October when the genocide started. We are a bunch of people of color, whether first generation migrants like myself. I'm from Lebanon. I moved here at an older stage in my life. But also it's like a mix. We were people who were born here and people who came here, but all from the story, from the global majority, and mostly grassroots. We all were active before. We've all been on the grounds for a while now, whether it was around COVID and how to do mutual aid, whether it's about food banks and how to distribute. So we've always been engaged. And yeah, there was a moment in Brussels where we were actually on the streets. I don't know what happened since. For a long time, we were on the streets. We spent winter under the rain. We saw lots of people from Gaza. It was their space to come and shout and scream and demand and have a person to talk to. Like, I speak Arabic. A lot of my friends here who are in a different condition speak Arabic. We were there. We would talk. We made connections. We started providing. We realized there's a big need for material help. People were sleeping in the streets. They didn't have phones to call their families. They were getting fines because they didn't have public transport. They were stuck in a very, very abusive, racist migration model. A lot of them had Dublin. Dublin is when you pass through another European country and you ask for asylum here, you have to wait 6 months to be able to break off your Dublin. And in that case, you're on the streets. They don't give you any support. So we decided, no, but our people in Gaza, they need some dignity.
So these are Palestinian refugees.
Yeah, they're Palestinian refugees, newly arrived. Suddenly there's this big genocide. They're watching their parents, their families, their loved ones, their lands, everything be erased on screen. So the streets provided an outlet in the beginning. There was a nice movement. Mm. There was a nice intersection between social groups that normally don't get along together. Mm. It was nice to see the queer people of color on the forefront existing together with everybody else, you know, like having the power, having the voice. There were a lot of women. It was mostly women and queer women doing the load of material and social help. So me and my comrades, we would go to Gare Centrale with bags of jackets on our backs and carrying bags of shoes that we would distribute on the spot there, because there were no distribution points. The state had washed their hands, and political parties do not consider socio-material help as a political act. So we were left to do this work, and this is why we decided to do to take on the money challenge. So we our aim is to collect as much money as we can and send to our channels. In the last year, we managed to have direct channels to direct areas that are very affected, that need intense help.
In Palestine.
In Gaza, in West Bank, in Lebanon, in Sudan, and in Congo, and also people living here. So this was, we needed money for all of this. Mm-hmm. And we decided to create a fund with a foundation. So it's called Fondation Marius Jacob. They are an NGO, like they are subsidized. They do the work of managing radical, social radical funds, including funds for against police violence. And, you know, like they have different. And so we were able with them, with their help, to create a fund where we could document our own identity. So our identity was visible, who we are politically, what we do. And this is our fund. And with this fund, we collected, so far we just did our accounting for the first time in a while. So far we facilitated over 170,000 euros in the last year to go to Gaza, to go to Lebanon. And we know, we are, by the way, we are just a collective. It's a bunch, most of us are on burnouts or are in on sick leaves or are handicapped or are, we are at the bottom of the social ladder as this collective. Yet we took on the challenge of money. We took on the risk of saying, okay, we're going to systemically collect money for these people. It comes with a risk. It comes with a risk of people wanting proof all the time. And in the system we function, like if we go via the channels that are set up, the humanitarian aid channels, it is ridiculously hypocritical and complicated. And actually, we realize a lot of the money never gets to the hands of the people on the ground. So we decided, okay, we need a radical fund. We need to find ways. We need to build a political discourse around it. That people just give the money. Do not ask anything. This is not a charity. This is not a donation. This is a reparation. You give back. You don't have a say where it goes. So we worked a lot politically on this. We were publicly fought at some point by certain pseudo-intellectual academic people who didn't want to take the risk of money, because money comes with a lot of questions, and they didn't consider it a political. So we were fought at some point. We had a collective in the beginning together with other people called Brussels Against Genocide, and there was a coup by those people, and they kicked out the grassroots, the ones who were doing the material help, which then transformed into Brussels for Palestine.
So I just have a question. If you could talk about this beautiful name. I loved the name Brussels for Palestine, just in its simplicity, but also the idea that this city is many people, right? Like, and often when the images of Brussels are projected to the world, it's very specific images of power, you know, the EU, etc. But there's many other Brussels, right? And so I love just thinking about the name Brussels for Palestine, because it shows and indicates in all the work that you described another Brussels.
Yes.
Could you talk about that?
Yeah, no, definitely. We decided that we are part of the city. We have been here struggling for a long time. We have our voice here. And we decided that, yeah, we want to be for Palestine. And at some point we've been thinking we want to be also for Palestine and beyond, because we also do a lot of intersectionality. Sure. We see the links between all the struggles. It's the same genocide being repeated since 1500.
Sure. You know, there's like, historical parallels.
There's definitely. It's been an, like, if we were watching when Columbus arrived, if we had Instagram and TikTok, we would be seeing what happened to the indigenous people in Turtle Island. The same as in Africa. If we had the footage we have today, we would see. So, yes. Yeah, we are for Palestine and beyond, and yes, Brussels can be radical. We are radical. There is a big group. We were on the streets. We were visible. We were loud. We disrupted. So, yeah.
I love what you were talking about this act of solidarity through dealing with the question of money, because I think that's often, you know, one of the more challenging aspects in grassroots activism. Yeah. But it's also, in a way, I can understand it's about material support, but it's also, in a way, about breaking certain taboos, right? And it's also, in the end, about that gesture that's concrete and concrete support. Please talk about that.
Yeah, if we're watching what's happening, any person watching what's happening, and I'm sure a lot of people are seeing what's happening, you realize no one knows how to deal with their shit like the Palestinians do. So who am I to decide how to give them money, where to give them money? Mm-hmm. All I want to do is facilitate, is allow them the lifeline that can cover their needs so they can continue surviving and fighting. Mm-hmm. Because no one, we cannot liberate, like, it is... They are the ones under these bombs. They are the ones carrying the, paying the price. And they know how to do solidarity. In the last year, because we took on the money challenge, we met people. We met people on the ground with their collectives doing amazing solidarity work.
Like collective kitchens.
It's impressive what they can do. And I think in the case of people in Gaza, solidarity is resistance. It's their resistance. It's their resilience. So they know the idea was for us to have this political conversation of let's step out of the colonial norms of how we give money and to who we give money and to stop with the conceptualization of money when we discuss it. Yeah, when people sit discussing money, they're often privileged. People who suffer are never on the table. So people who could like financially struggle the most are never on the table in discussions. So yeah, the idea is to bring a grassroots conversation around money, to break certain repetitive dynamics that help no one, and to face on, take that challenge and own our story. And right now money is the most practical thing we can do. You can't come to protests, we understand. You are scared for your work, we understand. You are paralyzed by what you're seeing, we understand. But if it is easy to click on an Amazon button to buy whatever you want to buy, it's easy to click on a button. Today there are endless fundraisers that are trustworthy. We know for sure they're getting there, whether it's via Brussels for Palestine or someone else. We also promote other people's funds, and we try to provide our platform to anybody who needs to send money. So, money is politics, and it should be decolonized for sure.
Right on. And yeah, I mean, that's a great point, because often the money question is left to international institutions where there's not a lot of grassroots connection. I mean, we are in the capital of the
EU. They are complicit, those institutions. Yeah. Those institutions are complicit. Today's humanitarian aid sector is complicit. They have no power. They are doing nothing. There's starvation. No one. They're doing nothing. So to be honest, we need to liberate ourselves from these structures. And this is why we need big money. It's not just the 10 euro donation. The story is ongoing. The costs are intense. We've been in touch with someone who wants to open a solidarity shop in Gaza. And we have been having discussions on and off about prices and how they change so drastically. And then at some point, they explained to us that 4 onions these days cost around 10 euros. So when you give this 10 euros and you think, I gave 10 euros today to Gaza, okay, I'm done, I did my job. Really, you cannot even begin to imagine what the need is. And right now there are no products. So the money is just there waiting for people are waiting also for the goods to come in. But in the meantime, give them money. As soon as the goods are there, they know how to get it. They know how to get themselves out. They need the money.
Yeah.
So money is important.
In terms of thinking about your work in relation to intervention, I want to go back to earlier what you were describing in our conversation, because you talked about your relationship to asylum seekers here in Brussels, and sort of being on the streets was about the protest, but also creating another space, right? And I think that that's such a meaningful and moving part to social movements that's often not as articulated, is the idea that the protests are about redefining space and redefining relationships and using public space in totally different ways. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure you've thought a lot about this. So if you have any thoughts about that.
Yeah, no, those protests and the streets gave us room that no public institution here would give us. Mm-hmm. And it is sad that we were left on the streets. But the streets allowed for us, there was this moment of, I would wait for, it's now 5:30, I'm going to head out to the protest in Gare Centrale. First it was in Bourse, and then they pushed us out because it was the Christmas market. We had to leave. And we left to Gare Centrale, and it was a space where we could hug and cry and grieve and talk and mm-hmm. check in. And we started meeting all these younger mm-hmm. kids in the yep. streets, and like they had... So from there also, there were a few squats that were opened eventually for housing an amount of Palestinian, mostly men left alone on the street. But we also have, as Brussels for Palestine, we also have a shelter where it's a small shelter. We can house either a family, a small family, or like couples. But we cannot house 30 people. Yeah. And that shelter was reserved for women. Sure. And so, and then we decided to open it to all women without papers, not just Palestinian women. And yeah, we did a lot of this work, and it all came from the streets. The streets became the community center. We met so many people, we heard so many stories, we had so many fights between us, like on communitarian mm-hmm. level. It's very interesting. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And from there, a lot of needs came out. We realized, okay, this is where we have to be to hear what's happening.
Exactly.
And to work upon it.
Yeah. And I mean, it points to another thing you brought up, which is the complice of the international institutions, mm-hmm. because a lot of international institutions, if you look at their basis of principles or their declaration or guiding document, or it has many different names, often they have a discourse that sounds okay. If you just look at the text, right? Mm-hmm. And that is so far from the street level you're talking about, where the needs are, right? And this can apply to many issues. Yeah. But there seems a lot of the crisis now in the world, it seems, is taking place because there is such a gap between like liberal institutions and what people's realities are. And that's what the populist right is exploiting, is that that space.
I agree 100%. There's a big class gap. And so far on working class level, there isn't any, like the left, it's a bit, in Belgium, I don't know, they are super fluffy. Mm-hmm. They're super fluffy, there's nothing serious, there's no real discourse. So yeah, there's a gap, and it causes to confrontations, and it blocks also from having a real mass movement, mm-hmm. which was possible for a long time when we were still on the streets, until it was broken down by political parties, because Intel, because PTB tried to monopolize the discourse and de-radicalize it all the time and control... Houses? Yeah, in the pro-Palestine protests, we always had what we like to call them protest managers. They came from the parties. They wanted always, they had the resources, so they had mics, and they would not allow like even slogans such as from the river to the sea. They would come and tell us, no, you can't say that. And always negotiating with police. And, you know, they broke the movement. There was a real grassroots working class movement that was starting, mostly led by women. And women of color, until it was broken down. And voila. But we continue to do the work. As Brussels for Palestine, we're still working. We don't stop. We have different campaigns. So we work on raising money, and we do have specific campaigns that we targeted that people can understand mm-hmm. without all the necessary administrative details. We raise money for feminist hygiene kits that are being distributed in the refugee camps. Every kit costs 56 euros. So if you pay 56, you cover a woman and her family for 2 months. And in it, we have things like hygiene products, shampoo, underwear, things like that, pads. We are supporting...
That's in Lebanon?
No, this one is in Gaza. These are in Gaza. So in Gaza, we support also a refugee camp where they're building in the Balakh water pump. We are now funding social solidarity shops to be able to feed orphans and women with no breadwinners they can get food for free, and others can pay solidarity prices. In Lebanon, we work with the anti-racist movement. We've been sending money to the anti-racist movement to go to the Ethiopian, Bangladeshi, Sudanese communities left on the streets. And we sent to a collective called Space. They are from Sabra and Shatila. They're a collective of young people who do a lot of grassroots also. They have been buying and collecting and distributing Pampers and milk and medicines, doing amazing work. So these are our main, and we still have one target. We are now aiming for 40,000 euros to go to the north of Gaza. That's only going to be for food, for like a collective kitchen and a solidarity shop. It's a lot of work, and people don't understand what this means, money. It's especially those who don't understand what it is to be without money. So they don't understand that today the situation is beyond catastrophic. There is nothing left in that country. There's everything, the infrastructure, all of it, the families, entire families wiped out, stories erased, farming land destroyed. So yes, they will need the resources to rebuild at some point. And this is why the money should be a focus now in every person's life. Give regularly, ask your families, ask your friends, do events. Center your life around how do I give money. Stop drinking alcohol and replace that by donations. Stop smoking, stop taking drugs, I don't know, like... Don't travel 3 times a year. Travel one time and donate the rest. There are so many ways we can do to give money. We're not even close to what we should be giving.
So a lot of what you described is this process that's ongoing for a long time now at a grassroots level. And I'm just maybe we could end on this point, which is sustaining this type of work, right? Mm-hmm. Which is, you talked about it being a lot of work, mm-hmm. but also this, I think a lot of people probably consider being involved, want to be involved, and there's many reasons that there's a blockage. Some of them are problematic, but also some people don't know how to make a leap. You're describing the fundraising, but I'm also thinking about people who want to be involved, right? Mm-hmm. Like for a long time, and you found a way to be involved, mm-hmm. and I'm sure it's had an effect on you.
Yeah, definitely.
Of course. If you could just talk about sustaining this type of work.
It's and very why, important. Yeah. I think one of the main things we need to do to sustain, and this is what we try to do as Brussels for Palestine, is to have a radical political discourse explaining. It's not just, I don't just collect money like this. No, there's a whole political work on deconstructing what is now and rebuilding something much fairer and more sustainable. And so if we do charity without a political message, we die.
Sure.
The thing that keeps us going is the political work we do parallel to our charity work. And we, for now, we are doing mostly Instagram posts, political posts, or poetic posts.
But you're also present in the community.
We are very present in the community, and now we're also organizing panels to talk about specifically, again, money. How do we do money? What is money? Why is it needed? I feel like people really take it so much for granted. They don't understand what it is. Although we live in a capitalist world where everything costs money, where, sure. you know. Yeah, so voila, the political work is what keeps us on our feet.
Thanks so much for talking today.
You're welcome.
Yeah,
thank you.
Thank you.
That was a conversation with an organizer at Brussels for Palestine, a community organization. As you heard about, doing a lot of important frontline work around the intersections of migrant justice movements and the Palestine solidarity movement. Thank you so much to that organization for engaging with this community radio program. I'd also like to thank my friends in Brussels for both hosting the space for this interview at the kitchen, and to Hala for suggesting it. I'm Stefan Christoph. This has been another edition of Free City Radio. We broadcast monthly on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal on Wednesdays at 11 a.m. on CJLO 1690 a.m. also in Montreal on Wednesdays at 8 a.m. on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg at 8 a.m. on Tuesdays, on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, on Wednesdays at 11:30 a.m., on CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria, on Saturdays at 7 a.m., on Met Radio 1280 a.m. in Toronto, on Fridays at 5:30 a.m., on CKCU 93.1 FM in Ottawa, on Tuesdays at 2 p.m., and on CJSF 90.1 FM in Vancouver on Thursdays at 4:30 p.m. You can find the archives at soundcloud.com/freecityradio. We also are available on the various podcast platforms. You can just search Free City Radio. Thanks for tuning in, and I will be with you next week. Take care.
Every time you tune into CJSF, you make a choice to step outside the box of what's normal and support an alternative. Alternatives are critical for making change, which we need so, so badly these days. I'm Chris Yee, your public relations coordinator here at CJSF, and I see you contributing to social change in your small and profound ways simply by tuning into us. Thanks for being on our team.
Hi, my name is Lowell, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, Simon Fraser Campus Radio.
Would you give me a beat?
CJSF 90.1 FM is the campus radio station for Simon Fraser University, located on Burnaby Mountain in BC, Canada. CJSF 90.1 FM. Diverse, independent, yours. Check us out on SoundCloud or at cjsf.ca.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia.